A fine morning to you in Nigeria and across the country. I wonder what time it is where you might be anywhere in the world. Good morning to you if you are on the continent. It's the final half hour before noonday here in Lagos, Nigeria, and other parts of the country. Welcome once again to COVID-19 Heroes on 99.3 Nigeria Info. What we do, we go around scouting, scanning, searching for the heroes of our dark, dark days. The people who go out of their way to do the best they can, the best they possibly can for others like you and like me, just so this situation doesn't do as much damage as it potentially could. We promised you on Monday that we'll be having one such hero, and we'd be looking today at issues bordering on food security for households and the nation. My name is Femi Obong Daniels. I don't do this show alone. My co-anchor joins me on every episode of this show via Skype, as does our hero for the day. So let me welcome my brother and friend, Wiba Boa. How are you doing?
Good morning, Femi. Doing okay. Yeah, doing okay. I can't believe how you guys on radio do this. I mean, this is only twice a week, but it seems like I'm here all the time.
The life, you know, the life. Anyway, yeah. you're used to your Monday, because yeah. Monday is just about your regular time on radio, right?
And, right. And yeah.
This
is the extra one.
This Wednesday added to it. It's like, that is beautiful. Welcome, Wiba. Yeah. How's the weather where you are?
All right. It's same weather you have.
Okay.
All right.
Let's get on with the show. Bring us to speed, Wiba.
You bet. Okay, so good morning, all. Today we have a guest by the name of Mezu Nunelli. Mezu is well, to start with, he's a very old friend. We actually went to high school together, secondary school together in Jos a long time ago. Mm. But he is out there known all over Nigeria as kind of the agriculture investment guy. So if you're in the agriculture space and you hear the name Mezu, you know that means excellence and everything. So today Mezu is going to talk to us about a number of things. First of all, one of the companies that he's one of the owners of, started a massive feeding program very early, kind of before everyone else. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about a few of their other agriculture companies so we can learn what they're doing to kind of adjust to what's going on now and how they're sort of repositioning to survive and also to serve the communities. And then finally, to learn about agriculture in general and whether we have concerns, whether we need to be concerned about what may be coming. If lockdowns continue, if restrictions of movement continue, what that might mean for the harvest later in the year. So these are all things that what is being done now can affect later on. So if I may, Femi, let me kick off to Mezu with the first question. But first, let me welcome you, Mezu. Thank you for coming on today.
Thank you, Wiba.
And just before you go to the question, let me ask you, great voice, you know, my brother, you should be on radio. And I was just going to, I just have a feeling that Wiba doesn't get the accurate pronunciation of your name. Please complain. And let's have it.
Sure, it's Mezuo Nwuneli.
Mezuo Nwuneli. Try that, Wiba.
Yes.
It's fine, but if it was a plateau name, I would get it fine. You know, so from 30 years ago, we knew him as Mezu, so we'll leave it at that. Okay. All right. So the first question, Mezu, if you can tell us about the feeding program that Ace Foods started quite early, how that's going, how it's moving ahead. But I think what's important for people to hear about is, and this is part of why you're on this show, is how, you know, in a time when your revenues were uncertain, you had no idea in a month if you would even be selling anything. And yet you decided, okay, let's take the resources of this company and let's start feeding people, even though in 1 month, 2 months, our company may not even be making any money. What led you to that? So tell us about the program and then what was the impetus behind it?
Sure. And definitely a very interesting program. And before I go to that program specifically, I would like to touch on four things that we've done as a group, and then I can expand on the program. So the first is that I run a private equity firm that invests in a range of agribusinesses across the country. Those companies produce everything from rice to dairy products to packaged food. And we had to make sure and engage with those companies that those companies survived and could actually get food crop from the farm to their plants and then from their factories to our plates. Many of us, when we buy food or eat food, we don't necessarily think of how that food got there. And if there's any disruption on that change, we would not get food in the store. So we had to make sure that all our companies across the country actually survived and could actually deliver food to households and stores across the country. I think the second initiative is that separate from this engagement with our companies, we also wanted to make sure that sort of the broader ecosystem of SMEs who are in the food space actually also survived during this period. So we coordinated a series of webinars where we got experts from our own companies, but also from the broader environment to engage with other food SME companies to think through issues about supply chain, people issues, risk mitigation, to ensure that they could themselves survive. The third bucket is around beyond just what's happening now and the crisis concerns about COVID-19 now, how can we actually, over the long term, ensure that as a country we are food secure and we can get the right talent feeding into the system. So over the past 3 years, we've actually had a scholars conference with universities across the country. This was the first year it was online. Initially, we were worried about that because we're not face-to-face with students, but it actually worked out much better because we got a broader range of students, a broader range of academics across the country, and effectively engaging with them to see, you know, one, showcasing opportunities for jobs in this space, and also engaging with educators so that we can actually work to ensure we have talent coming into the system. Now, the fourth is what, Weber, you brought up at the beginning, which is what Ace Foods did with their feeding program. Now, we approached it in a couple of different ways. One, we couldn't do it just by ourselves, so we wanted to reach out to a broader network. And we were able to engage with a broad range of people, people contributing just small amounts of money. So I think in the news, we hear about well-known people contributing large amounts of sums to ensure people actually have food and meals. But at the same time, there are quite a few people across all our communities who are giving smaller amounts, 50,000, 100,000 naira, to ensure that the people in their communities actually do get meals during this time. So which is what we did. We reached out to a broad range of people. We got about 45 people, each giving roughly 70,000 naira each. We aggregated this sum in addition to our own contributions, and we're able to distribute meals to through other nonprofits. So we didn't do this ourselves. We organized the food, and then we handed this out to different nonprofits across the country. So in Jos, we gave it to Lynx. We gave food packets to NGOs in Enugu. We gave around Lagos, Ogun State, to a broad range of groups that are doing very good things to ensure that the food actually gets to their community. And to your specific question, I think for us, it's, you know, Ace Foods has done well in general, but ultimately it's not just about financial returns in itself, but how can we have broader impact in our community? Because I mean, it's more than, there's a double or triple bottom line. Beyond the commercial return, is what impact are you having in the lives, not only of your staff, but those in the community around you. So I think those different things motivated us to actually engage aggressively very early on.
Interesting. Let me shoot this question. I mean, you have talked about collaboration with, you know, other groups and all of that, how you've expanded, how the feeding program has gone. And you've also elaborated on what Ace Food is doing. Now, Ace Food is one of the companies under your investment firm, which of course is Sahel Capital. You do have other agricultural companies, the more agriculture companies, you know, right there. Are they all involved in these? How are these companies changing and positioning themselves in this crisis period?
Sure. So I'll touch on a few. So in Anambra, we have an investment in Koscharis Farms. It's a large integrated rice producer. So large-scale commercial rice farming, a very large rice mill. and provides key stables across the country. So during this time, the past 6 weeks, the team there, led by an incredible management team, have had to work on getting rice paddy primarily from northern Nigeria. And given movement restrictions, you can know how tough that is just to get rice paddy coming across the country to the mill in Anambra State, in addition to the rice paddy being sourced from the region. And then to operate that mill and produce rice that goes to different key markets. So separate from ensuring rice gets to key different key markets, the company has also actually donated large amounts of finished rice to both the state government as well as different other nonprofits to ensure that food can give to vulnerable villages, communities around them. So we've done quite a bit of work with that particular company. In Kano, there is a company there we have investment in, a dairy company, LMZ Integrated Farms. And they have also had to produce, so they source milk from pastoralists, and that milk comes into their system and they produce products that then gets delivered from Kano to Lagos to Port Harcourt to Enugu. And they've had to actually ensure that their trucks operate during this period. Separately, the family there, the MD Abubakar and his family, have individually themselves also actively contributed food products to community around them. Now, I think one thing that is important to touch on, because many of us actually don't think about this issue, is how do you actually run a factory and a food processing operation during this time? Because for many of us that are remote working, we don't really think about it. And for people not in the food space, their factories are shut down. But there's a lot of thought that actually goes into how do you actually make sure you can actually engage work at the same time, keep your staff safe. So for each of our different companies, for LNZ, Coscharis, Ace Foods, for Lad Group, Polyfilm, different companies in our portfolio, they've had to divide their factory operations into two teams, A and B teams, to decongest the factory environment, each team working 1 week on, 1 week off. So if there is a sickness within one team, it doesn't necessarily impact other team members. And this is separate from hand sanitizers, face masks, the standard things that you have to put in place. For our poultry farm in Kwara, we have a large poultry farm, Dainty Farms in Kwara, that we've invested in. The team there has led by Shea, has done incredible work, because you can't close down a factory for 3 days and expect your birds to survive. You have to have people every there feeding the birds. Otherwise, you wouldn't have broiler meat and frozen chicken delivered to the stores. So for the past 3 weeks, they've actually had a team living on the farm in converted facilities just to ensure that the birds do survive and that they can be eventually processed and then sold. So there are key people in the front lines that are working hard, not only just to ensure their companies survive, but food actually gets delivered. And you have frozen chicken going from that farm in Offa, crossing many states' boundaries and borders and being delivered to places, for example, like Port Harcourt, and then coming back to Kwara again. And this is not easy to do. So many of them have even had to try new innovative ways to reach customers. So like Dainty in particular has said, how can we go online to drive sales, to create pull for our various distributors across the country, which they weren't doing before. So a lot of innovation and rolling up the sleeves that many of our companies have done just to ensure food actually gets to people's plates across the country.
Wow, Mizu, that's I mean, very helpful to know. I mean, I think when we go into grocery stores and we see the products, you know, our only concern is, okay, is there food on the shelf to buy? And I think very few people actually think about, okay, what did it take for this to get here? Even in a normal circumstance, the chain is complex. And then now it's obviously much, much more complex. So people listening, when you're out there, when you buy a chicken, when you buy rice, when you buy milk in a grocery store, I hope that what Mizu has talked about makes you realize that every one of those people out there in that chain, you know, working in factories, still going to work, taking risks in many ways, are actually part of these heroes that are keeping food going, keeping food security for the nation going. And there's a lot out there that goes on behind it. But let's move on to another question. So, you know, the African Development Bank president, Akin Adesina, you know, called on sort of the international investor community not to allow for fiscal distancing, as in, you know, while we're social distancing, don't, you know, create so create a situation where we impoverish entire nations. And from that, you know, some investors have said, okay, fine, yeah, let's see what we can do to make sure companies we're invested in weather this storm. So, you know, I guess it'd be great to hear from you both as an investor, because each of these companies you talk about, you know, you put in debt, equity, you know, they probably have to pay you some money soon to service those debts. You know, so what has Sahel Capital done in terms of giving some measure of palliative to these companies so they can survive? But then even your own investors, I mean, are they calling you every day and saying, hey, Mezu, we really don't care what's going on. Stop giving money away. You got to make your profits. You owe us money. You know, all the how are you seeing it both from the side of an investee receiving money, but also as an investor? What's the atmosphere?
Sure. So, a very important question. And we field quite a few calls and emails every week from our investors who are trying to figure out what's going on and how does it impact the investment they have in our fund. At the same time, we want to make sure that the money we've invested is also secure and eventually comes back with a good return. And I think what helps is that ultimately we are long-term investors. We're not looking to pull out money next week, next month. You know, we are longer-term investors. And key for us is to ensure that the companies can weather the storm. So we've done a couple different things. So one is we are more actively engaged with our companies and their bankers, for example, just to ensure that if there are any particular concessions or restructuring if needed, or additional lines that can be provided, we can be involved in that process. We have a grant facility, which we can use for very targeted purposes to provide relief or for certain interventions if needed. Now, I think one thing that helps us is that the food and agriculture sector, especially if you have a domestic supply chain, is more resilient than many other sectors. So thankfully, we're not in tourism, we're not in oil and gas, we're not in the airline industry, which have been harder hit. So the key message that we communicate externally to our investors is, yes, they're challenging times, but take a look at our companies. They are essential services. They are surviving during this time. Longer term would even, you know, do much better longer term. And so they should have more confidence. And as they look across portfolios, they're seeing that certain sectors are more resilient than others. Now, it's also a wake-up call for the investor community. And I use that as a broad definition. So investor community, including the governments, but also including different development finance institutions, that across all countries, we need to pay attention not only to the medical and healthcare sector, but also to the security of our food.
Right.
And security of food is absolutely critical. We need to, and it not just is food available, but can we get food to the most vulnerable? And I think it's very important as investors, we pay attention to that food ecosystem, that network, to ensure that whatever crisis comes up in the future, that food network can remain strong. And last point on this is the domestic supply of food is also critical, because we've seen as well that borders have closed across the world. It's extremely difficult to bring in items, take out items. And this is not just Nigeria, this is many countries in the world. And it's those countries that have very robust, solid domestic supply chains that will weather the storm much better than those that are import dependent on key different food staple items.
Well, I was actually going to ask you what's the motive behind advising your competition, you know, through your webinars and all of that. But I think you've touched on all of this, the motives behind it, and it is self-sacrificing, if you'd allow me to say, and that's why you are a hero on the day. I do want to come home, and yes, you've touched on it a little bit. The rains are here, and there is apprehension in the land whether or not food is going to run out. Now, the questions are, you know, what's happening with the sector across the country? Do you fear that we are inexorably advancing into some serious food deprivation or scarcity? Is that your thinking? And how long might it be if that's the case?
Sure. I mean, another important question, because whatever happens now, this planting season, we'll feel the effects in 4 to 6 months when harvest of different crops come to the market. So if certain things are not resolved now, we will feel the pain towards the end of the year. And the things to take into account are fertilizer, seed, different seeds, different crop inputs that farmers need at the start of the planting season to farm effectively. And if they don't have those things, either they would not be able to farm, or the yields they would expect from what they do farm would be diminished. And there are concerns. I do not know yet whether I'm worried or not, but there are concerns to pay attention to. So first is that there are various crop protection blends that are in, that are imported, some blended here, some imported directly. And there have been delays in getting some of that. Different companies have had delays getting some of that in. And should that delay impact this planting season because farmers don't get as much, there will be an issue. In the same manner, would our farmers able to get the right improved seeds that they need to their farm on time, and especially with movement restrictions? So we have to think about the various states closing borders. Yes, in theory, if you're in food and agriculture, you can move, but in practice, it's not as easy to move. And so the concerns are ensuring our farmers get the right seeds, crop protection, fertilizer, because planting season has effectively started. And if a sufficient number don't get enough of these inputs in time, we would have a challenge 5 months from now. Am I worried yet? No, but it's something that we are watching closely because it, it will have impact if not handled well.
Okay, so it's not too late yet, is what you're saying.
It's a hard question to answer because there's work being done now. And we really would not know whether it was effective or not till after the fact. So I do know there are delays. I do know that there are challenges getting in. Now, one way to think about it, though, is that farmers would still plant, but would they plant with improved seeds or last year's grains?
So yields might be down,
Exactly. So they could still plant, but without the right tools they need, which would impact the yields because they're not using fertilizer or crop protection or the right input, so yields could be impacted even if they do plants.
Final question from me. What would you tell the man listening to this show now who doesn't know where his next meal will come from? What assurances? What will you tell him?
That's a very, very tough question to ask or to answer. And this is not just Niger specific, this is worldwide, but I think the message I'll communicate is that as individuals, as a country, we have to remain strong during this time. There are tough times ahead. And I'll actually communicate the message not to that individual who is looking for a meal, but to those of us who are able to do something. I think it's very important for individuals, those of us that are able to do something, to remember those around us who are less fortunate. And we should actively seek to see how can we have individual impact to those of us, those around us looking for the next meal. So that, and you can even say beyond being altruistic, is ensuring that all of us cohesively go through this together. Because if we're self-focused, I think everything from security, crime, unrest would just go much, much, much higher. But the message is to those of us around us who have, we need to pay attention to those who have not and to look out for them.
Maizuo Nwuneli, Managing Partner, Sahel Capital, you are indeed a hero. We applaud you, we thank you, and we encourage you to keep up the good work. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Yeah, thank you, Maizuo. I mean, I think you also broke down some very complicated issues around agriculture in a way that makes it very, very easy to understand. It's like professor of agriculture. You know, my last name actually means farmer. When I need to learn about agriculture, this is the guy we go to. So
I don't know if you've ever planted a seed.
Well, I have. But I wouldn't survive.
All right. And thank you. At least we know the name Meizu for short from France, and 3 decades of friendship going on between you guys. It's amazing to still be in a position to continue to do the little bit you can for the majority. It's such a blessing. Thank you very much. Weibo, we got to go. We've run way out of time. But what are we to expect on Monday?
Okay, yeah. First of all, let me just say, I think the charge that Meizu gave is very important. Everybody out there who has means, do something. Do your part.
I tell you.
Because that's the only way we can all get through this. Mm. But look, on Monday, we have another show, and we're going to have a person actually dialing in from abroad. Damilola Ogunbuyi. I think she's well known for people in Lagos. She did a lot of the power projects in Lagos under Governor Fashola. Mm. She was then the head of the Rural Electrification Agency in Abuja. And as of January, became the head of the Sustainable Energy for All UN organization, which is basically looking at energy access globally. And so she's going to join us to talk about the power sector and the importance of power in a time like this, and what we need to do to make sure that power is delivered to power health facilities, you know, to keep agriculture going and everything, and what we really need to do now to make sure all of that still goes on. So she's a Nigerian global hero now, and she'll be a delight to have on the show.
Interesting. So until Monday comes, then, it's been a pleasure doing this from Lagos, Nigeria Info Studio, and Weibo, my co-anchor, joining me via Skype, and our hero of the day, Meizu Owuneli, managing partner, Sahel Capital. On behalf of these fine gentlemen, I say thank you, and I wish you the very best of the rest of the week. Stay safe. Take all the precautions you need and help out where you can. We'll be all right in the end. Bye-bye.
Thank you.